Welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we start Unit 17, Social Movements and Democracy and Assessment. And our topic is Movements and Democratization. As we have seen above that many scholars believe that the social movements play a positive role in democracy in different ways. One, social movements are the outcome of people's political consciousness. It is an expression of people's consciousness for asserting their demands. Two, social movements encourage participation of people on political issues. While articulating agenda of the struggle, the leaders discuss or explain various aspects of the issues with the participants. Such process of discourse also contribute in developing and sharpening consciousness of the people. Political participation and consciousness of the people are backbones of democracy. Third, success and effectiveness of social movements depend on the extent of mobilization. Greater mobilization tends to expand political horizon and lead to further democratization of society. Fourth, social movements express aspirations, needs, and demands of the people who can only assert through collective actions and become effective. They keep the policy makers on toe and accountable of their decisions. Fifth, number of social movements influence policy makers and compel them to enact laws to meet their demands, advancing or protect their interest. The following are illustrations. In last units, we have learned about various agrarian movement in the pre and post independence period. During the 1920s and 1930s, there were a number of peace and movements in different parts of the country. Some of them were spontaneous of local peasants and some were organized by Kisan Sabha, Gandhians and left parties. These movements were against the labor land lords demanding land to the tenants, sharecroppers, and tillers. In several places, the demand was for abolition of forced labor. Such movements influenced the Congress Party, which led the freedom movement. Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru observed the growth of the national movement under the leadership of Congress resulted in the peasant masses joining the Congress and looking to it for relief from their many burdens. This increased the power of the Congress greatly, and at the same time it gave it a mass outlook. While the leadership remained middle class, this was tempered by pressure from below, and agrarian and the social problem occupied the Congress more and more. The struggle for independence began to mean something much more than political freedom, and social content was given to it. The Congress Manifesto of 1946 declared that the reform of the land system, which was urgently needed in India, involves the removal of intermediaries between the peasant and the state. Soon after independence, several state or provincial government initiated action to enact laws for the abolition of the intermediary interest in land. Jamindari system forced labor, etc., were made illegal. However, these laws were not implemented with speed and efficiently in most of the states. But the last 1950s series of poor peasant movement took place in different parts of the country against landlords and rich peasants. Most effective and widespread movements was Naxalbari, which begins in West Bengal and spread in many parts of the country. In the 1960s, the socialist and left parties organized land grab movements. There were also a number of grassroots movements of agricultural laborers demanding higher wages and distribution of surplus land. In order to pacify these classes and woo them in elections, Indira Gandhi gave a slogan of Garibi Hatao and formulated a number of programs for eradication of poverty. However, movements of the poor peasants and laborers have not been widespread and strong since 1970s. In the 1920s, Dr. Ambedkar organized a number of movements of Dalit against untouchability, which included temple entry, use of water from public tank, use of public roads, etc. In 1930s, he launched a movement for separate electorate. Gandhi and Hindu opposed it. Gandhi then went on fast against the demands of Dalits. That leads to famous Pune Pact between Gandhi and Ambedkar. As a result, Gandhi had accepted reserved seats and Ambedkar had accepted a joint electorate. This struggle influenced the later event, M.S. Gore notes. One wonders whether without the Pune fast and the subsequent emphasis that Gandhi gave to untouchability work, there would have been a sufficient change of opinion by 1947 for the Constituent Assembly to have declared untouchability to stand abolished, to have provided for reserved seats for scheduled castes in the legislatures for a period of 10 years to begin with, and to have agreed to the provision of special protective measures for them. It is equally possible that without Ambedkar's protest and astute leadership, there would neither have been the Pune fast or pact, nor the subsequent churning of public opinion. One can assess a similar kind of impact of movements such as of women, Adivasis, organized working class, etc., on formation of state policies on different issues. Regional and ethnic movements of Nagas and Mizos, people of Punjab, Andhra Pradesh, Gujarat, Maharashtra, Jharkhand, Uttarakhand, etc., resulted into formation of linguistic or ethnic states. Now, Niraman movement of 1974 in Gujarat on the issue of corruption in general and the political corruption in particular resulted into the change of the government. The ministers and members of the state assembly were forced to resign. Next topic is movements against democracy. However, it should be emphasized that all movements per se do not necessarily lead to more democratizations. As we have read in Unit 3 of this course, there are types and types of social movements varying from protest to rebellion and revolutionary, and different movements have different ideologies. History has witnessed in India and elsewhere that some social movements oppose social transformation. They may be called counter movements. People are mobilized to resist change coming from the oppressed section of society. Anti-reservation agitation in 1980s is a case in point. The upper caste students were against the reservation for the scheduled caste, scheduled tribe, and other backward castes. They launched agitation and succeeded to some extent in preventing the government for the implementation of reservation policy for the OBCs. The movement for Rama Janmabhoomi and Hindu Rashtra is another example. It may be noted that Hitler, the architect of National Socialist German Workers' Party, mobilized Germans in 1930s against Jewish, communist, and liberals. With dogmatic virtuosity, he played on national resentments, feeling of revolt, and the desire for strong leadership, using all the most modern techniques of mass persuasion to present himself as Germany's redeemer and messianic savior. He then captured power through elections. Rajnikothai does not justify all types of direct actions. He said in 1960s that the action is desirable only if the political change desired by the group involved in direct action offers a greater scope of political freedom than is offered by the existing political arrangement. As discussed in Unit 2, Gandhi, who championed protest against injustice and misrule, was against violent movements. He warned that if disobedience is carried out in the style of Durga and not within the framework of Satyagraha, it may well lead to widespread indifference to legality and lead itself to those who would use illegal tactics to undermine faith in democratic processes. It may be mentioned that Gandhi withdrew civil disobedience movement after the Chora Chori incident, which became violent. He feared that such mob violence might repeat in other places, and the Congress was not able to control and direct the masses. Bipin Chandra has recently argued in his book, In the Name of Democracy, JP Movement and Emergency, that JP Movement had undefined goal, loose organization, and confusion in its ideology. JP was not able to provide democratic direction to the movement. Far from saving democracy, the movement was responsible for actually putting it in danger without leading to any long-term political gains. Emergency brought the country to the verge of long-term dictatorship. In other words, social movements without clarity of ideology and organization may prove counterproductive. It can be used by the forces which have no faith in democracy. Now, summary of the unit. Democracy and social movements are closely linked with two sides of the same coin. Social movements are the expression of collective will. It is the soul of democracy, expression of people's grievances against the system, their needs and aspirations, and their desire to get involved in political processes. And without people's politics, democracy is a form without substance. The present functioning of the democratic system in India and the elsewhere do not reflect will of the majority of the population. Most of the parties are functioning without democratic decision-making process within them. Elections have become rituals that do not provide adequate alternative choice to the people. More important, people's wishes are not taken into account in form of economic decisions. The part of economic development is anti-democratic. People ventilate and articulate their aspirations and opinion through collective actions in the form of social movements. The movements keep political leaders on their toe and build pressure on government. Some of the movements have to some extent succeeded in enhancing democratization in society, mobilizing and politicizing the people to take part in decision-making processes. They have also to some extent influenced public policy in their favor. However, all social movements do not necessarily lead to greater democratization. Nature of social movements in terms of their goals, ideologies, organizational structures, and programs play important role in strengthening or otherwise of democracy. I want to wind up this lecture, and we have come to the end of the unit as well as we have come to the end of the course. Thank you so much for your attention.